BBC Radio 4.
Welcome to Just a Minute. Thank you. Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away once more, it is my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only those who receive us via Radio 4, but also on BBC 7 and the Internet, and of course on the World Service. And this particular show is coming from Edinburgh, and we are in the Pleasance, which is one of the venues which is on the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, and we have an excited audience here. We have somebody who's played it frequently and is one of our top comedians and very popular on the show, and that is Paul Merton, and sitting beside him is somebody he always gives huge contribution, that is Clement Freud. And sitting on my left, there's two comedians who have not played Just a Minute before, and they are Rob Brydon and Marcus Brigstock, and will you please welcome all four of them? And as usual, I'm going to ask them to speak on a subject that I will give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition or deviation. Beside me sits Janet Sablehurst. She's going to help me keep the score. She has a stopwatch in one hand, a whistle in the other, and she'll blow that when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And in front of us, we have a really excited, hyped-up festival fringe audience, eager to get going. So let's start the show with Rob Brydon, being a Celt. Clement, you've challenged.
Hesitation.
Yes, right.
That is almost institutionalized intimidation and abuse on a hitherto... And why am I wasting this now? Yeah,
that's exactly what I was going to say. Yes. But I think it also means being slightly generous, so to make sure you got a point.
Oh, thank you. Yes, thank you very much.
So you have a point for being interrupted before you got going, and...
In which case, feel free to interrupt me again before I go.
And you have, 59 and a half seconds. Being a Celt, starting now.
To begin at the beginning, being a Celt is surely one of the greatest gifts that God can bestow on any man of this earth, particularly those that find themselves to be natives of the British Isles, whether you be an English person or a Welsh person. It is...
What do I do? Person. Oh, Clement, your challenge.
Person.
English person, Welsh person. It's a difficult game.
Not played it before.
I know. And you were going so well, you were just actually carried away with it, weren't you?
I was getting a bit full of myself, wasn't I?
No, you weren't. You were giving such wonderful information. Clement, a correct challenge, so you have being a Celt. 41 seconds, Clement, being a Celt, starting now.
I'm not sure what being a Celt is. I am not. But...
Paul challenge.
A hesitation.
There was a hesitation, yes. He's not a Celt, and
really.
He paused. I was wondering for a moment what he was, I think.
The hesitation between two words, that's right. Just clarifying your ruling, Nicholas.
Yes.
Wonderful chairman, best chairman we've got. Wonderful.
The only one who'd ever put up with all of you, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, Paul, you have a challenge, which is correct. You have 37 seconds, being a Celt, starting now.
If anybody knows about being a Celt, it's Nicholas Parsons. When he walks through the courtyard of the Pleasance, people shout, look at that Celt over there. And it's wonderful, because nobody actually knows his lineage or where he was born, but it's undoubtedly true as he walks through this magnificent city of Edinburgh.
Rob challenge.
I just thought there was a repetition of walks.
No, he said walk and walks, you see. This is the awful thing about this game. They are so clever at it, because they've been playing it so often, you see. They do that walk.
Nicholas, I have to say, I think I did say walks twice.
Well, that's very generous of you, because knowing how you play the game, Paul, and once or twice you've done this...
Normally I would, but I made a mistake.
So, well done.
Thank you very much.
And well listened. So, so you've got in there. I'll have to twist Janet's arm again and say, you have 22 seconds, being a Celt, starting now.
There are many qualities which mark out a Celt. A dark, swarthy frame, a low centre of gravity, an ability with the rugby ball that borders on genius, although as the years have gone by, the performances on the pitch haven't been what they once used to be. In the old days, players such as J.P.R. Williams, Gareth Edwards, Phil Bennett, Ray Gravel.
So Rob Brydon was listening well and got in there before the end and kept going to get that extra point when the whistle went. He's now equal with Clement Freud and Paul Merton in the lead, all three together. Marcus Brigsock has yet to speak, and now it is his chance.
What?
Marcus, yes.
Oh, good.
Good, right.
I'm ready.
That's right, Marcus, you want to say something?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right. The subject is corduroy. Have a little moment to think about it. I don't know why they laugh. I don't know what you're wearing, but it's not corduroy, is it? No?
No, not the suit.
Corduroy, 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
I'm a big fan of corduroy. I think it's a very reliable fabric. One thing you do have to be enormously careful of, though, is walking too fast, because the two sides of the trouser will rub together, causing a terrible friction between the legs, and can often start what we corduroy wearers refer to as a small bushfire, which can be tremendously uncomfortable. You will have seen this if you follow portly women in corduroy trousers in a hurry to get to a shop down the high street. I have always favoured the corduroy myself because I think it carries with it a certain gravitas,
Can I give you a tip?
Please do,
If you happen to slip up like that, don't draw attention to it.
Right, yes.
Because sometimes they can be generous, the regulars, and let you go on.
They'd have to be generous and stupid to have missed that one. But bless you, I'll make
Paul,
it over.
Paul, you challenge.
A repetition of Sir.
That's right. So you've got the subject of corduroy, Paul, and you have 22 seconds starting now.
I'm amazed that I've got 22 seconds to talk on corduroy because it's not nearly long enough. Corduroy for me has been an obsession since I was 7 years old when I was given some for my birthday. And what a beautiful present it was. You can imagine my eyes alight with wonder and surprise as I opened up the package and said to my parents, "You have bought me corduroy! How wonderful!" I immediately constructed a most
So Paul Merton was speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point, and he's now taken the lead at the end of the round. And Paul, it's also your turn to begin. The subject here is how to tell when someone is lying. Interesting subject. Off you go, 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
Hello, my name's Tony Blair, and I believe there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. This is one of the lies that if you hear, you can tell the person is lying. There are other physical attributes, such as scratching your nose or just rubbing your chin. Sometimes, perhaps, you go purple because there is a belief that your skin, your...
Clement challenge.
Hesitation.
Yes, we call that hesitation. Clement, how to tell when someone is lying, and there are 41 seconds starting now.
If you meet a Celt who says, "Where's Holyrood? I'm wearing corduroy."
Marcus challenge.
A hesitation on wearing corduroy.
Well, he did. I mean, all that sort of confused speech. Mm. We interpret that as hesitation. Marcus? And so, Marcus, you've got in with the correct challenge. A point to you, 35 seconds. How to tell when someone is lying, starting now.
As Paul was pointing out, there are lots of different ways of telling.
Paul, challenge.
Well, it's repetition.
Why?
Because as I pointed out.
Because the audience enjoyed Paul's interruption, give him a bonus point. But it was not a correct challenge within the rules of just a minute, Marcus. So you have another point, which is good for you, and you have 32 seconds to continue on how to tell when someone is lying, starting now.
There are lots of ways to tell if somebody's lying. Body language would be one of them. Talking to Jeffrey Archer would be another. That's a sure sign that somebody is fibbing. There are also lots of opportunities to...
Rob, challenge.
A repetition of lots.
Yes, lots.
Lots of it.
Lots of repetition.
So, well, listen, Rob, and you've got in with 21 seconds on this subject of how to tell when someone is lying, starting now.
Some say that lying is an important part of everyday life so as not to cause offence to people. For example, some who maybe have put on some weight and you don't...
Clement challenge.
Three sums.
There were three sums.
Three?
Three, yes.
It was almost an equation.
That's appalling, isn't it?
It's not really appalling. I mean, it's just a bit of fun, isn't it? I should explain to all our listeners overseas that is a phrase that Rob uses in his stage show and also on his television show.
Almost incessantly.
And it's very effective. But that was it.
Still repetition.
Right. And, yes, but don't use it too often here, because it will be repetition, as you say. Right. Clement, a correct challenge, how to tell when someone is lying, and there are 11 seconds starting now.
You look them carefully into the face and watch.
To the face?
What was that?
You look them carefully.
You look them carefully into the... What is that? That is deviation from the English language. Certainly something in that area.
That's the area, right. Yes. So, Rob, you have the benefit of the doubt, you have the subject, and you have 7 seconds. How to tell when someone is lying, starting now.
Often when a person is lying...
Clement, challenge.
He said person earlier.
You said person earlier.
You
Oh, what? No, you can't, if you've been already used it when you were speaking before.
any words you've used in your previous life appearing here, you can't use any of those.
No, you can't use the same word in the same round again.
I'll play with the rules, but I'm not happy.
Well, if you genuinely didn't know, maybe Clement will be generous and let it go on this occasion.
Yes.
Right. Give him a bonus point for his generosity. Clement gets a bonus point for generosity, but for the newcomers, if you've got the lost the subject and get it back, you mustn't use words you used when you were talking before, on this subject only. Right. How to tell when someone is lying, and there are 5 seconds left, Rob, starting now.
Sometimes...
Yes.
He said some before.
Sometimes.
This time he said sometimes, which is one word.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. As a literate man who writes articles frequently in the newspapers, I'm quite surprised to hear you say that. But then bluffing is one of your big strong points.
Sometimes.
he's right. There's a gap the way he says it.
Yeah. There is a gap. There is a gap.
Sometimes. I agree with you, Clement. The context in which you use it, it can be some times, but on this occasion he was saying sometimes, and as an opener to his sentence. So, Rob, an incorrect challenge. You have another point, and you have 4 seconds, starting now.
A person will often try and...
Oh, no! I will say this, Rob, you're about the only person to get rounds of applause when they make a mistake.
You should come home with me.
Dear. Right, Paul, yes.
Repetition of person.
Yes, person.
Incredibly.
Incredibly. Surprisingly. And Paul, you've got him with 2 seconds to go on how to tell when someone is lying, starting now.
How to tell when someone is lying. It's a very...
So, at the end of that round, Paul Merton, speaking as a whistle end, gained that extra point. He's now one ahead of Clement Freud, he's 2 ahead of Rob Brydon, and Marcus Briggs starts bringing up the rear. We're back with Clement Freud. Clement, another Scottish subject up here in Edinburgh. Mary, Queen of Scots. Oh, what a fascinating character. Talk about her, if you can. 60 seconds, starting now.
In Australia, if someone is lucky, they say she landed with her bum in the butter. Now, Mary, Queen of Scots, could not ever be said to be like that. She had a really unhappy childhood. She became queen when she was 1 week old. Born in 1542, she was executed before the age of 50, having spent 19 years in prison. Elizabeth Carter...
Marcus Challett.
Yes, there was a hesitation.
There was a hesitation, yes, Marcus. And so you have Mary Queen
Scott. Mary and Elizabeth has to be. In order to
pay due deference
didn't
to...
didn't like each other.
No. Yes.
But I don't think your pause conveyed all that.
I failed.
32 seconds for you, Marcus, to tell us something about Mary, Queen of Scots, starting now.
Mary, Queen of Scots, or as she's known here in Scotland, Mary Queen, was queen for a while, and that's... history, you know? I just do programmes about it. I don't really know anything about it.
But, Paul, you challenge first.
Slight hesitation.
Slight hesitation, yes. Right.
It was going to get longer as well, so you were right about it.
So, Paul, another point to you, and 22 seconds, Mary, Queen of Scots, starting now.
How lovely to have 22 seconds to talk about Mary, Queen of Scots, as indeed I had for the very same subject of corduroy a little while ago. Well, I'm going to take those seconds, and I'm...
Ah, Clement challenge.
Repetition of seconds.
Seconds.
No, I said second that
time. No, you definitely, I was listening. Clement, a correct challenge. Mary, Queen of Scots, and there are 13 seconds starting now.
When I came from King's Cross in London, I travelled on a train called Mary, Queen of Scots, which...
Poor challenge.
I had the bloke painting the side of the train, had a stroke in the middle of the...
So your challenge is...
Well, it's deviation from Mary, Queen of Scots.
Yes. And it was Mary, Queen of Scots, whatever it was. And, yes, I think, benefit of the doubt, and 7 seconds on Mary, Queen of Scots with you, Paul, starting now.
Acne's been a terrible problem here in Edinburgh, but if you go to a chemist called Mary, she's Mary, Queen of Spots. What a wonderful woman. She puts the cream right on your face, it disappears immediately.
So, once again, Paul Merton was speaking as a Mr. Wen gained that extra point. He's a few points ahead of Clement Freud, Rob Brydon and Marcus Brugstock in that order. And Rob, back with you to begin. The subject, DJs. Can you tell us something about DJs in this game, starting now?
I was once a DJ for the BBC in Wales.
Clement, challenge.
BBC.
Oh, for heaven's sake. This is victimisation.
It's one of the things that happens in just a minute.
But
well, it oughtn't.
And of course, let him go on. I'm sorry.
Because the regulars listen for those sort of things, which are common sense, almost like a word, isn't it, BBC?
Almost.
But actually, within rules of just a minute, it is repetition of B. So,
and
but
I'm
anyway,
not
no, that. No, but no, no. Clement has been generous. Listen, who's running this show? No, Clement has been very generous. So give him a point for generosity. You were interrupted, so you get a point for that. And you have DJs, and you have 56 seconds starting now.
My programme begins at... Oh.
And that's what happens. You get interrupted, you've lost the flow, haven't
Absolutely
you?
Absolutely awful, yeah.
And, no, not awful. It was lovely. They love it. They love it. 53 seconds. Marcus, you challenge first. I think I know what it was, but can you tell me just to be sure?
Yes, it was sort of slow grinding down of Rob's ability to speak.
Right. So we call that hesitation. It's much simpler to put it into one word.
Okay.
And you have DJs and you have 53 seconds starting now.
Clement was absolutely right to interrupt because people are always complaining about repeats on the British Broadcasting Corporation. However, the modern DJ is a slightly different animal from the one that broadcasts on the radio.
Clement challenge. Hesitation. Yes, so Clement, you have something now. And you have DJs, Clement, you have 37 seconds starting now.
I don't know many DJs. I believe it's short for disc jockey. But I know a lot of jockeys. Let me tell you the names of Hugh Gordon Richards, Steve Donoghue, Lester Piggott, Arthur Breasley.
Yes,
it's a deviation. It's a clever deviation, but it's a deviation.
It's a deviation, yes. Because he's talking about jockeys and not DJs.
Yes.
And what are DJs?
Disc jockeys.
I was talking about jockeys.
I know. But the subject is disc jockeys.
And I'm owed the benefit of a doubt.
No. But you won't get it for that one, because I think it's definitely DJs are disc jockeys, and you were talking about, presumably, jockeys who ride horses. So you have the subject, Rob, and you have another point, of course, and you have 21 seconds, DJs, starting now.
If Clement had decided to list DJs, he might have come up with names along the lines of Dave Lee Travis, Tony Blackburn, Mike Reed...
Paul Challenge.
I don't think Clement would ever come up with that list.
The point is, we don't know. He might surprise us all and come up with...
Is there any way we could ask him?
No.
Has anybody seen Clement Freud? He's in the building, I'm sure.
But what we do is, we don't ask him. We give you a bonus point because the audience enjoyed your interruption. But you weren't interrupted, so you get a point for that, Rob. And you keep DJs and 12 seconds starting now.
Pete Tong, Steve Wright, Mark Lamar, Terry Wogan, Ken Bruce.
The thing about listening is eventually you dry up. 5 seconds, Paul, on DJs, starting now.
The first DJ to work on radio in this country was called Christopher Stone. He broadcast in 1925.
Tom Merton has increased his lead with an extra point for speaking as a whistle went, and he's ahead of Clement Foyd and Rob Brydon, who are equal in second place. Marcus Brigstock is bringing up the rear. He's only just in fourth place. And
That's very kind of you, Nicholas, but I think we all know it's not true.
It is, actually. But it's your turn to begin, Marcus. For some reason, the subject they've thought of for you is you're working on an oil rig. I don't know if you have any personal experience of that.
I do.
You have? Well, there's a subject. 60 seconds as usual. Off you go. Now.
They've given me the subject of working on an oil rig because it's what I did when I was a teenager. I have to say, at the time, I was also working as a podium dancer in between working on the oil rig, which was enormous fun. I had long hair and a goatee beard, and I was tremendously popular with many of the other workers aboard the rig while we drilled in the North Sea for oil, and in between my long two-week shifts...
Clement Challenge.
Repetition of long...
Yes, long hair, you see.
Hair and shifts.
Those are the rules of Just a Minute or Less. Long shifts.
And also that was quite patronising, so...
Correct challenge, Clement, you have 35 seconds. Tell us something about... Oh, this would be interesting. Working on an oil rig, starting now.
If you want to visit someone who is working on an oil rig, as I did recently, in order to ascertain what sort of food and drink... was available to such workers. I went...
Poor challenge.
Slight hesitation.
Yeah, definite hesitation. Right. Working on oil rig with you, Paul. 21 seconds starting now.
Unusual to have 21 seconds instead of the normal figure that I normally allocate for a subject, but working on an oil rig is a fascinating experience. I was 19 years old at the time.
Marcus, challenge.
Yeah, deviation. I worked on an oil rig and it's not fascinating.
See, that is one of those difficult decisions I have to make. That could be a matter of opinion. You know, you may didn't think it was fascinating. Paul could think it was fascinating.
I'm prepared to come in.
It's not fascinating, it's terrifying is what it is.
The benefit of the doubt.
The benefit of the doubt was going to you, Paul.
Oh, I'll have it then.
All right. And you have 12 seconds working on an oil rig starting now.
The North Sea brushing against the steel legs that are embedded in the ocean. It was fantastic to be...
Marcus, challenge.
I'm terribly sorry, deviation again. They're not embedded in the ocean. The oil rigs that operate in the North Sea float.
You seem to doubt that, Paul.
No, absolutely. The one I have is embedded in the ocean. That's what made it so fascinating. It was They quickly abandoned the idea because they said, what's the point? We could have them floating. And somebody went, oh, sea float. So after that, they abandoned it, which is probably when you went.
Yeah.
And Marcus, a correct challenge. And you have the subject because you know and we don't. 6 seconds, working on an oil rig starting now.
I happen to know that oil rigs float because when I was working on one, we tipped our oil rig up on 12 degrees.
Paul, challenge.
We tipped.
No. No. The audience are listening as well as me. That's good. You have half a second, Marcus. I'm working on an oil rig starting now. And another one. So, Marcus Brigstock was speaking and the whistle went then, and he got that extra point. He's leapt forward. He's still in fourth place, but he's... No, he's now only 2 points behind Rob Brydon, 3 behind Clement Foyd, and 5 behind Paul Merton in that order. And Rob, it is also your turn to begin. The subject is optimism. You're very optimistic in your show, I think, and it's lovely. But you talk on the subject, 60 seconds, starting now.
This is my first appearance on...
Marcus, challenge.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I think this round's going to go really well for you, and I...
So the new boys are playing together over there on the left. So, Marcus, give him a bonus. The audience applauded. Give him a bonus point because they enjoyed the interruption. But Rob gets a point because he was interrupted. And you have 58 seconds on optimism. Rob, starting now.
A sense of optimism is vital as you step into the arena here next to Nicholas, as you look out at the audience and wonder, how am I going to manage to fill a minute on a variety of subjects that I perhaps know...
Marcus, challenged.
Deviation. Why? Plus, the bell's a bit broken. But because you don't fill your minute on a variety of subjects, the minute is filled with one subject at a time. I'm sorry, I've got a lot of points to make up.
Right, yes. I think that was a very clever challenge. And maybe of a certain benefit of the doubt, but you have it.
What
and you
do
have
a
you the have the subject. Point, you have the subject, yes.
Which
you have
is...
optimism. And you have an optimistic attitude already, and you
do.
Have 46 seconds starting now.
People say you can define optimism by whether or not somebody looks at a glass of milk and says that it's half full or 50% empty. But I don't think that that's actually the best way of judging whether somebody is really optimistic.
Rob, challenge.
A repetition of weather.
Weather, yes, there were two weathers.
Much like being in Scotland, yeah. Raining.
And, Rob, you've got it back, and the two of you are fighting it out here to bring up the rear. 32 seconds, optimism starting now.
I'm pretty optimistic that I'll be able to bring up the rear very convincingly against Marcus as my point tally slips ever downward on the slope to...
Paul, challenge.
Well, that is deviation. Your point tally can't slip downwards.
No, that was
relatively
deviation.
It can.
No, not
as, as others rise, surely my tally appears to slip down.
No. In the realm of pure mathematics, it stays stationary. Relatively, it will appear less, but it will not go down. It was a correct challenge, Paul, so I've got to be fair and just within the rules of just a minute. You have the subject. You have 22 seconds. Optimism starting now.
Once again, 22 seconds to talk about a subject. How curious that number should come round every time. Perhaps you, if you are optimistic, you can think perhaps it is...
Clement, challenge.
Repetition, perhaps.
Yes, and you have optimism, Clement, and you have 14 seconds starting now.
One would have to be hugely optimistic to do the subject in 14 seconds. It's an odd number, but I shall do my very best to optimism in that number.
Rob, challenge.
Well, there was a repetition of do and also
do.
Hesitation, yeah, to do the number. One would have to be, yeah.
Do.
One challenge will be sufficient, Rob.
Okay, the challenge I'm going to go with then is hesitation.
And hesitation I'd agree with, yeah. Entirely. So you have optimism back, you have 4 seconds, and you start now.
With a total of 4 seconds remaining, surely even the bleakest optimist would feel that...
As I said before, this was to be the last round, and what an interesting round it was. A lot of points were scored. And just to give you the final situation, Marcus Brigslock, who's never played the game before, came back, and he finished in a brilliant fourth place. He really was. And he was a point or two behind someone who's played the game more times than anybody else. That was Clement Freud, at a great value as always. And he was 1 point behind Rob Brighton, who's never played it, but he was in second place. Points ahead of them was Paul Merton. So, Paul, you come out on top as the victor this week. Only remains for me to say thank you to these four delightful players of the game, Paul Merton, Marcus Brigstock, Rob Brighton, and Clement Freud. I thank Janet Staplehurst, who's helped me keep the score, and she's blown her whistle, well, nearly every time, with such delicacy, except for the time she swallowed it. And we thank our producer, that is Claire Jones. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this delightful game, and we're very grateful to this lovely audience here on the Fringe, who have cheered us on our way. In a magnificent way, from this audience, from me, Nicholas Parsons, and this team. Thank you. Tune in the next time we play Just a Minute.